Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nielsen, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey, everybody. Happy New Year. It is a New Year's Day edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. Hope you had a great holiday season. I've not done one of these since right before the Baltimore game. I'll be honest with you. Recapping the Baltimore game would have felt like recapping a colonoscopy. I don't know how much thirst there was out there for a recap of a 31-2 loss. So the rare occasion where I decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a vacation and celebrate the holiday. But I'm back now with a mailbag episode and getting you ready for the Tennessee Titans game on Sunday. We got a lot to get into with these Texans. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays, and off and running here in the new year. We worked this morning. We were on the air at 6 a.m. this morning here for you, the people. So mailbag episode today. We'll have an episode later this week of this podcast where we preview the Titans game, give you the six-pack of things to watch for and what should be one of the stranger games of the season. I don't know that we're completely sure yet how D'Amico Ryans is going to handle things. We'll get, I would imagine, a little more clarity today as I'm recording this. I believe they are at practice right now. I'm recording this at about 11 o'clock. So I got to get through this and do the mailbag so I can get to watching some college football playoffs. I got my Irish going tonight. We got a little UT and Arizona State going this afternoon. We got the Rose Bowl this afternoon. So we got a lot of football to consume, and we got a lot to talk about here on the podcast. A reminder to hit the subscribe button if you have not yet done that. If you found the podcast and you like the podcast, you enjoy it, you find it a nice, concise, consumable thing for covering and consuming Texans content, hit the subscribe button. Give us a rating and a review as well. That always helps with the numbers too. So quick reminder on that. And also the mailbag. We're going to get into a mailbag. We're going to get into several of your questions here momentarily. But if you do want to send an email, houmailbag@gmail.com. houmailbag@gmail.com. My only request is try to keep it concise, keep it brief. If it's War and Peace, there's a good chance I'll just go delete because we're getting more and more emails, which is great. But I want to be able to make sure that I am getting the good ones in here and the ones that are easy to consume. My time is valuable. That's all I'm saying. You know, the less time I spend reading through it better be fucking entertaining. If it's like eight paragraphs long, that's all I got to say. Better be worth like watching, or I should say reading it like over a drink. If it doesn't hit that standard, man, can be angry. So there you go. There's the administrative stuff. We'll get into the mailbag in just a second. But again, I feel like the biggest Texan stories right now, the Titans game, how does D'Amico Ryans handle the lineup, if you will, you know, the who plays in the game, who doesn't play in the game. Excuse me for a second while I turn on the lights. It's better. That's a little more lively if you're watching on the YouTube. So it'll be interesting to see. My co-host Seth Payne is under the impression, he's predicting that they will not play C.J. Stroud in this game, which I don't have a big problem with. I said earlier this week, there are six Houston Texans who I would unequivocally keep out of this game just for those exact reasons, for health reasons. C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, Derek Stingley Jr., Joe Mixon, and Nico Collins. And I don't even, for me, it wouldn't even be a particularly difficult decision. Now, D'Amico Ryans understandably wants to get the bad taste of the Ravens loss washed out of his mouth. So I don't think that's a bad reason to play guys. it's probably not the greatest reason to play guys the whole game. I can understand wanting your team to figuratively speaking, watch the ball go through the hoop. You know, they say that all the time about shooters when you're in a slump. Did you see that ball go through the hoop on a shot and all of a sudden your confidence is back? I think that's what he's hoping for with the offense. We're in week 18 and this thing has looked like garbage for most of the season, this offense. So I'm skeptical that they get stuff accomplished on the road at Tennessee, a team that played them well when they beat them, when Tennessee beat the Texans in week 12 this year. So I think there's just as good a chance, even as bad a team as Tennessee is, they are a decent team defensively. I think there's as good a chance that you go out there and you do nothing to get your confidence going offensively as there is that the Texans are going to go out and score, you know, three touchdowns in the first half and then say, shut it down in the second half. That would be amazing. That would be a best case scenario. Now, one point that's gotten brought up by other coaches who are in similar situations to the Texans where they could rest guys because certain games are not meaningful. Dan Campbell's win over San Francisco, that game meant nothing to the standings. Everything for the Lions and the Vikings is on the line this coming Sunday night when they play for the number one seed in the NFC. They didn't need to play their guys, the Lions, in that win over the Niners, but they did. I've seen other coaches talk about it as well. It's escaping me. It might have been John Harbaugh or Jim Harbaugh. One of the Harbaughs, I think, talked about it as well. Hey, there's only so many guys you can sit. This isn't college where we've got 100 guys on the roster. You got to be able to field a team. And there's only 46 plus the two practice squad elevations that they can bring to the game every week. So all of a sudden you're talking about guys who are already inactive because of injury. Add on top of that, making guys who are healthy inactive, and it gets tough to field a team out there. So I understand that part of it as well. So maybe six guys, putting them in bubble wrap is an extreme sort of thing. You only have so many corners. Stingley, you may have to play, that kind of thing. Edge rusher, same thing. Quarterback is a different animal. And if CJ Stroud is indeed suffering from anything physically, and he more than implied that he is in his press conference after the Ravens game, he said he's banged up, then that's good enough for me. Let Davis Mills get in there and run the offense and see how it goes. That would get some confidence going if all of a sudden the offensive line and the team started running the football, but it was Davis Mills at quarterback. Because imagine what you do with CJ Stroud at quarterback. Yes, even this version of CJ Stroud in 2024, which is not as good as the 2023 version. So the handling of the players, big story. The addition of Deontay Johnson, I'm very anxious to see how that plays out. He's somebody who should be playing a majority of the snaps. And D'Amico, it was interesting. D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio said two very different things about onboarding him, onboarding Deontay Johnson. D'Amico said, we're going to throw the kitchen sink at him and see what he retains. Nick Caserio on his GM show on Texans All Access said he talked more like it was going to be bite-sized pieces for Deontay Johnson. Either way, he needs to be on the field a ton, whether it's Davis Mills or CJ Stroud at quarterback. You have to have a better idea of what exactly it is you have in Deontay Johnson. Because even without having played a snap for the Texans, given what he brings to the table physically, skill-wise, speed-wise, talent-wise, he's in the top, I would say, 12 to 15 of your most valuable guys on the team, and that's without having played a snap. He's more valuable than John Mechie, Robert Woods, Xavier Hutchinson, or Jared Wayne. Those are the other receivers. His sheer talent level, he can provide a reasonable facsimile if he's right physically and he's plugged into the playbook, or at least the plays he needs to know. He's the one guy that can bring you a reasonable facsimile of what Tank Dell brings to the table. That's valuable. So I'm anxious to see. It seems like everything good so far on the off the field stuff. I watched a Deontay Johnson press session in open locker room on Twitter. I forget whose account it was. So my apologies there, but it was about a 2.5 minute media scrum. He's saying all the right things as you would expect. So good luck, Deontay Johnson. I can't believe I'm saying that because I've never been a huge Deontay Johnson fan. I wasn't a huge fan of his when he was in Pittsburgh. I thought he was inconsistent catching the football. I had no idea about all the off the field stuff as well, that he was just a little tough to deal with. We only need you for this game. And then whatever games are left over in the postseason, man, just hold it together for – give us three games, because that would mean that the Texans are playing in the divisional round and they actually won a playoff game. So that would be great. It looks like right now the Texans will have a 77% chance of playing the Steelers, a 19% chance of playing the Chargers and a 4% chance of playing the Ravens in the wild card round. I think we can all agree we want nothing to do with the Ravens at all at any point in the playoffs. So when it comes down to the Steelers and Chargers, I actually put up a poll, and a majority of Texan fans actually want the Steelers. It's almost in line with what the computers are saying the chances of them playing the Steelers are. It was like 75% or something of a poll that I put up said they'd rather play the Steelers than the Chargers. On a neutral field, I may be in agreement with you on that. And independent of the seeding in the AFC, I would, you know, if it was just one game and you play on a neutral field and there's no stakes or whatever, yeah, I think I'd rather face Russell Wilson than Justin Herbert. I think it gets a little more complicated than that on two fronts. One, Steeler fans are going to travel, and I don't know if I've got the appetite for a Texans home playoff game to feel like a road game, which it will with Steeler fans. I promise you that, especially with the mood of the Texan fan base right now. So there's that. You know, whatever difference there is in beatability of the team, to me, it's almost canceled out by the fact that the optics and the sheer noise of having the opposing fan base take over your stadium would suck. That would just be a buzzkill. The other thing is, too, if you're playing the Chargers in a 4-5, it probably means the Steelers are the 6th seed, which means they would face the Ravens. And I think the Steelers have the best chance of doing some of the dirty work for you and getting, if you are able to win the wild card game, then the best thing for you as the Texans would be for somehow the 6th seed to knock off the 3 and the 7th seed to knock off the 2. Because then you'd get a home game in the next round. And oh, by the way, that means that the Ravens and the Bills would be out of the playoffs. I think the best chance of that happening is to have the Steelers in the 6th seed, a team that's experienced at beating the Baltimore Ravens. They've beaten them a ton through the years since Lamar Jackson got there. The last time they played against each other, before Christmas notwithstanding, the Ravens won that game in Baltimore. But I think the Steelers give you the best chance of upsetting the Ravens. And I think if you can root for the Bengals to sneak in as the 7th seed, I think they can give Buffalo everything they can handle in a wild card round game. So the Bengals are playing very, very well right now. If they can find a way to sneak into the postseason, they're going to need some help. They're going to need the Broncos to lose, and they're going to need, I think, the Dolphins to lose. So I think the Bengals only have like a 10% chance of getting in there. But man, if you got those two teams in there and they're giving the Bills and the Ravens all they can handle, able to beat them. So I dare to dream. I know there's a lot of you are like, if we just want a wild card game, we're going to get knocked out. That's fine. But sports are weird, man. Things can happen. So that's what we're looking at as far as the playoff standings go. Two more things Texan related. We'll get into the mailbag after that. Pro Bowl voting is done for the fans. Kind of a lackluster representation for the Texans in the Pro Bowl voting. If you missed it, the leading vote getter among all players is Travis Kelce. Not a big surprise. He's got a crossover appeal, obviously, with him fornicating with Taylor Swift on a regular basis. The others in the top five, Jahmyr Gibbs, I think, was 2. Jaden Daniels was in there, 3. I know Jared Goff was in the top 5 as well. I think Joe Burrow might have been in the top 5. Detroit fans showed up big in terms of stuffing the ballot boxes, which who can blame them? That's a fun team to root for with a fun head coach. So Detroit, there's a lot of Detroit representation. The league only posted the top 10 vote getters at each position. The Texans had 6 guys finish in the top 10 at their respective positions. Derek Stingley Jr. was 7th among fan voting for cornerback. Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter were 3rd and 4th, or vice versa. I don't remember exactly what order they were in, but they were the 3rd and 4th leading vote getters at edge defender or edge rusher, whatever they're calling it, defensive end. Joe Mixon was 10th among running backs. This is across the whole league, not just the AFC. And then the two specialists, Kyme Fairbairn, 6th among kickers, Tommy Townsend, 3rd among punters. If I had to guess as to who was actually going to get named to the Pro Bowl, and I'm not talking about getting named after half the guys selected say, no, I'm not going, and then they bring in alternates. I'm talking about selected through the process, which is 1/3 fan voting, 1/3 player voting, 1/3 coaches voting. So it's a combination of those things. So this fan voting is only part of it. If I had to guess who's going to make it, I would guess that all 3 guys on the defensive side of the ball, I would say Stingley for sure is going to make it. And at least one of Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson is going to make it, if not both. I think Joe Mixon's got a real shot because the AFC is very light at the running back position, and Mixon has either been feast or famine. He either gets 25 yards or he gets 105 yards. So he's had 7 100-yard games this year, and I feel like those numbers have gotten a lot of attention. Plus, he's doing it all on his own. He's getting no help from the offensive line and the play calling. So I feel like Mixon's got a decent shot at it. And I think one of the two specialists, either Townsend or Fairbairn, is going to make it. I think all six guys who finished in the top 10 at their position have a decent shot at making it. Fairbairn, I don't know. Like, Chris Boswell's had an amazing year for the Steelers. He's literally won a couple games for them where they haven't scored touchdowns. They've just kicked field goals the whole game. That's attention grabbing. Townsend, I think, if I had to pick one between Fairbairn and Townsend, I would take Townsend. I'm not saying he deserves it. I think he will. I think he's got a better chance of making it. He's the top vote getter among AFC punters. People know him from his time with the Chiefs. He's got the long hair hanging out the back. That's a good look. He's suns out, guns out. He's got the sleeves rolled up. He's very energetic. He calls people bitch on the field. There's a lot to like about Tommy Townsend, is what I'm saying. So if I put the over-under, I'll put the over-under 3.5 as number of Texans that get named to the Pro Bowl in the initial process. I'm not talking about 6 quarterbacks back out. So, okay, CJ, your turn. That's the biggest takeaway for me from the Pro Bowl voting, is that CJ Stroud didn't finish in the top 10, or he's not nowhere to be found on the Pro Bowl balloting, which is crazy because Bo Nix is 7th and Sam Darnold is 9th. And those guys have both had good years, arguably better years than CJ Stroud. Certainly Darnold, for sure, a better year than CJ Stroud. But CJ is, at least coming into the season, a big star in this league. I think he still is, but not having a great season. And a lot of those performances that have dragged his numbers down have been on national TV. So there's that. Last Texans item before we get into the mailbag. Congratulations to Dylan Horton, named the Ed Block Courage Award winner. Of course, Dylan Horton in remission from cancer, from lymphoma, if I'm not mistaken. I apologize. I forget exactly which. I think it was Hodgkin's lymphoma, but I don't totally remember. So don't quote me on that. I just know Dylan Horton is a cancer survivor, which is incredible, amazing. And the fact that he's back on the field and doing good things for the Texans, very, very well-deserved award. It's an award that typically winds up going to somebody coming back from either a traumatic injury or cancer. In the case of the Texans have had 4 Ed Block Courage Award winners for their team in the last decade that are cancer survivors. David Quesenberry back in 2014, I believe. Andre Howell, the former safety, in 2018, I think. And then the last 2 years, it's been John Metchie and Dylan Horton. So well-deserved. Congrats to him. Congrats 20 years later. It's the 20-year anniversary of Seth Payne, my co-host, winning the Ed Block Courage Award. So there's that. So it's the coolest trophy. If you ever watch Seth, I don't know if he still has it up on his YouTube in his home studio, but he used to, at least. He had the pewter. It's a pewter helmet that looks so cool. It's a really badass trophy. I think Seth has said it's his favorite trophy that he has, is that Ed Block Courage Award. It's a badass looking trophy. So congrats to Dylan Horton. All right, let's get into the mailbag. A reminder, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. We start with Ben in the South. It says, watching the Lions offense. And this is Ben watching the Lions offense on Monday Night Football. Watching the Lions offense makes it so obvious that Slowik has to go. Watching the creativity and use of each player's talent in Detroit makes watching Slowik's bland, predictable, sad offense unbearable. I agree. You are picking the gold standard of offenses. So I think there's, to be fair to Slowik, there's probably like 20 other teams that feel like, oh, if we could just look like this. Ben Johnson is amazing. Ben Johnson does something every week, it feels like, where he's almost showing off at this point. Like the fake stumble play that he did against the Packers, if I'm not mistaken. There's other plays that he's running. He had an offensive lineman scoring a touchdown a couple games ago, maybe last game. It might have been against the Niners. I don't know. They all blend together now because the Detroit Lions are such a fun watch, especially offensively. I can't believe I'm saying that about an offense with Jared Goff at quarterback, but the rehabilitation of Jared Goff's career is real. Like, he's a top 5 MVP guy. So yeah, totally with you on that. Bobby Slowik, as you guys can probably imagine, gets a lot of attention in today's mailbag. Thank you for the email. As always, Ban in the South. Jason and Leander, my fellow WWE fan, Who should I take in Week 18 Survivor out of these choices? The Titans, who are obviously going against the Texans, the Dolphins at the Jets, the Patriots hosting the Bills, or the Chargers, who are at the Raiders, which will be a meaningless game if Pittsburgh wins Saturday, but the pick is due Thursday. Oh, so it's due tomorrow. Okay. I would not take the Chargers under any circumstances, whether they need the game or not. The Raiders have been frisky lately. That's a division game. It's on the road. I just don't trust. That's a rivalry too. Even though neither of those teams are in the same cities they were in, when Amy and I went to a Raiders-Chargers game like 10 years ago, back when it was Oakland and San Diego, and it was incredible. Those two teams hate each other. So I wouldn't touch that game with a 10-foot pole. Patriots hosting Bills. That's one where Josh Allen is going to play minimally. He's going to get his start streak extended and then get the hell out. Patriots are hosting the Bills, so it's a Mitchell Trubisky joint. Okay, let's put a pin in that one. Dolphins at the Jets. That's a meaningful game for the Dolphins, but it's in New York. It could be cold weather. Dolphins in the cold weather. Oh, boy. These are my only choices, huh, Jason? Man, I can't believe I'm – am I going to say the Titans? Would I take the Titans? And this is what I will say. If it's the Titans, you've at least got an emotional hedge, Jason. I'm assuming since you listen to this podcast that you're a Texan fan. So at least with if the Texans win, then the Texans beat the Titans, and we all love that. I don't care what the records are. We fucking hate the Titans and everything about them from ownership on down. So you get that. You get the Texans winning the game. But if the Titans win, then your survival pool exists. So I'm inclined to say Titans. But if not the Titans, I would take the Patriots hosting the Bills. I know the Patriots look like dog shit against the Chargers, but they do dial it up sometimes. Like the Chargers were trying in that game, and Justin Herbert's really good, and I think the Patriots got down and they quit in that game. No great choices, though. The most motivated out of all those teams is going to be, it for sure is going to be the Dolphins, because they are, you know, they're still in the mix for the playoffs. Not some good choices out there. My first choice would be go Titans, emotional hedge. I hope that helps. Also, who is your 2024 WWE Superstar of the Year, and why is it Drew McIntyre? I'm not the biggest McIntyre fan. He's had a good year, though. He's been fun this year. Is it too vanilla for me to say Cody because he won the championship? He finished the story at WrestleMania. Is that too vanilla? I'm still supremely entertained by anything having to do with the bloodline. It's hard to pick one out of that group. And I'm just a huge fan of anything that CM Punk does. But I'll go Drew McIntyre with you. I'll ride with you on Drew McIntyre. Drew had a good year, man. These feuds they got going at the top of these cards. That Netflix debut on Monday is going to be tight, man. That's going to be amazing. They loaded that shit up. So appreciate you on that one. I'm trying to think, man, my superstar of the year, because it could be a female too. Big on Tiffy time, man. Big on her. Not maybe like superstar of the year, although she does have the money in the bank, if I'm not mistaken, right? So there's that. All right. Happy New Year to you as well, Jason. Appreciate you. Kyle in Denver. At Christmas, I announced, quote, I put my hope in Bobby Slowick, and now I'm the one on the cross, end quote. My wife told me I need to stop watching football and repent. Should I listen to her? Now, if you had asked Sean Pendergast this question, yes, I just third-personed all of you, 20 years ago, I would have said, oh, no, listen to her. But this is where I remind you that within those last 20 years, I have divorced and remarried, and so I'm much more into actually listening to my wife and what she has to say and suggest. I would say that your quote was a little over the top, that you were announcing it at Christmas, and that you're the one on the cross. So you're looking for my advice. If you're looking for me just to give you a blanket no, because I can be an ornery son of a bitch sometimes, I'm not going to do that. I'm siding with your wife on this one, Kyle, because look, I don't want a bolt of lightning to come down and strike you. You're a regular listener and a regular emailer to this show. You contribute. You bring something to this. So no, I don't want any lightning to strike you. Repent. Listen to your wife. Because divorce is a pain in the ass. You don't want that. Repent. Listen to your wife. 2024, Sean, is, 2003, Sean, looking back now, so proud of 2024, Sean, now, I would say, as to how I've evolved. All right, Dave is in Round Rock. Watching the game, I thought that if D'Amico Ryan suddenly turned into Buddy Ryan, he may have punched somebody. D'Amico is a fierce competitor on the field, but he's no longer on the field. He has to put some fear into the hearts of the offensive side of the ball. He's the head coach, not the DC. It'll be next season before substantial changes can be made, but it's his offense, not Bobby Slowik's. He has to take ownership. That's all I got. D'Amico, two seasons of D'Amico, I've started to be able to kind of read his angry face. And yeah, he was boiling over, it looked like, as much as he can in that Baltimore game. D'Amico walking over and slugging Bobby Slowik, I don't think is going to happen. Although if they want to relive that scene in that game where Buddy Ryan punched Kevin Gilbride in the face. I think it might have been a New Year's Day game, actually, as I do this podcast on New Year's Day. They want to reprise that, you know, but with new characters, you know, like it's kind of like, you know, this is, you had the Bad News Bears with Walter Matthau, and now we got this version with Billy Bob Thornton, that kind of thing. I'm here for it. Now, here's the thing. D'Amico would send Bobby's head into the third row. D'Amico, I don't know that he's a fighter in the traditional sense. Like, he's obviously one tough son of a bitch. And as a player, he was a beast. But how is he as a fist fighter? I don't think Bobby Slowik wants to find out. I'll tell you that right now. Yeah, good observations, Dave. And Dave, actually, kidding aside, does touch on something that I think is a big topic heading into the offseason, especially if the season ends the way that it's been going lately, which is in disappointment. I think that'll be a big topic, is does D'Amico need to farm out the play calling on the defensive side of the ball? That's a tough one, because that is the side of the ball that is getting the job done right now. You know, so that's, I mean, there's an element of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The defense isn't necessarily broke. I mean, there's some things they can do better, but considering who they have personnel-wise, considering who they're missing, I think this defense has played up to or beyond its potential this year. I think that's, I feel comfortable in saying that. The defense has been way more about those 9 wins than the offense. And I think, conversely, I think the 7 losses are far more on the ineptitude of the offensive side than the defensive side. So there is an element of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The problem is D'Amico's handling, the fact that he is focused, hyper-focused on the defense, is that affecting his ability to be a CEO? You know, how presidential is D'Amico Ryans? I think he's got a presidential demeanor, but how presidential is how he functions? And I think that'll be a big topic. Like, the biggest things heading into the offseason, not to get to the offseason, we still got the playoffs, I get it. But if the season were to end today, the biggest topics would be, how do you fix this offense? And it starts with the coordinator. That's the easiest thing to fix. Find somebody better than that guy. And then the offensive line's its own deal. Then I would say D'Amico and how, you know, what's his MO going to be moving forward? And then I would say third to me would be C.J. Stroud and what went wrong. Like, from him, like, independent of Slowik in the O-line, what does C.J. need to fix? And what does C.J.'s offseason need to look like? You know, no more podcasts, at least for now. You know, I far be it from me to tell a guy to not make a buck, but if he didn't do any commercials either, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Although his commercials, his presence on breaks during broadcasts on commercials was far less intrusive and volatile and polarizing, far less than his appearances on the various podcasts, where, you know, he was handling himself like he was a top 5 quarterback. And I don't necessarily mean that in a good way. He was handling himself like he'd really accomplished big things in the league. And granted, he's only been there a year and he's accomplished some of the biggest things you can accomplish for a first year player, but it's not aged well. So that, I think that, and then the next story after that will probably be free agency. Do you bring back Stephon Diggs? Where's Tank Dell in his rehab? All that stuff. But going to be an interesting offseason. Let's wait till the offseason to get there. But Dave and Round Rock got me on a tangent, man. Appreciate that. Joe Q is back. Joe Q says, I'm capitulating to the fire Slowik crowd. 3 quick questions. Okay, this is good. This should mean firing the entire offensive staff, right? I would dispute anyone still holding a man crush for Gerard Johnson. He needs to own C.J. Stroud's decision-making and growing inaccuracy. And the receivers coach needs to own John Metchie's mediocrity, just as the O-line coach has failed to develop Kenyon Green. and Juice Scruggs. That's an interesting question. The offensive staff, and because Danny Barrett, the running backs coach, has survived multiple regimes. I think he goes back to Bill O'Brien. That's how well thought of he is. His players all like him, although I don't think there's a, on this team, I don't think there's a single player that doesn't like their position coach. I think it's almost ingrained in the type of player they bring in that they just take to teaching, which, yes, Joe Q, you bring up a good point. If this is a group that takes to teaching so well, why do they look so poorly taught? So based purely on performance, I would say the tight end coach would have to go if you fire Bobby Slowick. Chris Strouser, I think, is gone whether they keep Slowick or not. Like, there's no way you can run it back with this offensive line with, at the very least, the O-line coach not getting let go. They are either the dumbest group of players in the world or the coaches are not great communicators as to what they want done because they're a mess. And I don't think talent's the issue. I think they've got raw physical talent. And then Ben McDaniels, the receivers coach, to pin one player not developing, to say, why'd you get fired? Like, if you fired a guy and you go into their office, so you go into your boss's office and he fires you, you go, why did you fire me? Because John Metchie is only a slightly below average wide receiver. When meanwhile, that same coach, if we're putting the bad on him, we've got to put the good on him as well. Develop Nico Collins into a top 10 wide receiver. Tank Dell, when he can stay on the field, and that ain't Ben McDaniel's fault, when he's healthy, he looks like a guy who's been very well coached. So there's that. And I don't know what the relationships are like in the building. You know, McDaniels, I believe, was on Lovey's staff last year, so he survived a coaching change. So the answer to me, Joe Q, on this first question would be no, you don't necessarily have to fire the entire offensive staff. Jerod Johnson is by far the most interesting one because of the local ties here. Because Jerod Johnson was, and may still be, a rising star in the coaching business. He interviewed for some OC jobs last year and chose to come back. I think him choosing to come back probably had a lot to do with the thought that Bobby Slowick would be moving on. Now all of a sudden Jerod Johnson's the OC for CJ Stroud, and that coaching CJ Stroud becomes some sort of kingmaker position, which it felt like it was going to be after his rookie year. And obviously right now it's not that. So there's the blood of this regression for CJ Stroud. Some of it has to be on Jerod Johnson's hands. If we're going to give him credit for the outstanding rookie year, then it's only logical that he gets some of the blame for this second season. To be clear, if they cleaned house and just brought in a whole new offensive staff, I don't have a big issue with that. To me, there's very few position coaches out there that are bigger than the overall performance of that side of the football. But if I were power ranking it, and Slowick obviously is a coordinator, if I were power ranking the position coaches that have to go, O-line, tight end, this is just on the offensive side, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, I would go in that. And Danny Barrett, the running backs coach, has survived multiple regimes, and yet the only running back that gets on the field is Joe Mixon, who I give very little credit to Danny Barrett for the development of 28-year-old former Pro Bowler Joe Mixon. Great question. All right, the other two questions. It seems logical that the new OC has one job, and I'm not sure the scheme is all that important. The job is to fix CJ. If CJ merits a second contract, his two calling cards have to be decision-making and accuracy, because there's now a lot of evidence about what he lacks that other QBs have. The two big missing pieces for him or a lack of escapability and inability to make his O-line better by calling adjustments at the line of scrimmage. Regarding escapability, he's seen a lot of free rushers. It seems most of them put him on the ground. Truly elite QBs make free rushers miss or have them bounce off. I'm still struggling to find the question in here, Joe Q. It doesn't look like there's a I don't see a single question mark in any of these paragraphs. So if your point is the OC needs to fix CJ, I agree with that. Last question. How many more repeats of Chiefs Ravens CJ will it take to start having nightmares about Daniel Jones and Trevor Lawrence? Okay, zero about Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones, I've never been a Daniel Jones fan. I was one of the people saying, don't give him $40 million a year. He wasn't even that good in the season that they won 9 games. He's got a blank stare on his face where he just looks like one of the dumbest individuals to play quarterback in the history of the league. C.J. Stroud does not exist in the same universe as Daniel Jones. Trevor Lawrence is an interesting one because Trevor did get a second contract like Daniel Jones did. And C.J. is going to be up for that same conversation after just one more season. That's how quickly the rookie contract goes by. So I'm more inclined. Daniel Jones, nope, I'm not even worried about that. Trevor Lawrence, I think C.J. is a much better thrower of the football than Trevor Lawrence. I think there's more athleticism to Trevor Lawrence's game. Trevor Lawrence has been super banged up, and we hear how banged up CJ is. The question is how many more games like Chiefs game and the Ravens game will it take to start having nightmares about Daniel Jones and Trevor Lawrence? It would take next season starting off the same way this season ended for it to kick in for me. Like if the first month of next season looks like the last 2 months, then yeah, I'm there. Because I think he's going to get a second contract. You know, Trevor Lawrence got a second contract and they were coming off a season where they completely shit the bed to lose the division championship. And Trevor never really had a great season. He won 9 games in 2022, but he hadn't been named to a Pro Bowl to my knowledge. Right. So I would say if they get out the shoot, the offense next year, and it looks the same as it did this year, especially after they will have made big changes, you know, if it's stuff that it's looking more like it's CJ's fault, that'll be where I get a little nervous. All right. Owen in Perth. I don't think we've had an Australian email yet, mate. Owen in Perth. I listen to your podcast on my way home from work in Perth, Western Australia, when it drops. Best show on the Texans. Owen, you're the man. You're in Perth. We got nicknames for some of the people, like France in the North, Ben in the South, Joe Q. We've got nicknames. Can I call you Outback Owen? Is that an insult to I? You know, like there used to be a wrestler named Outback Jack in WWE. He was from Australia, and he wasn't any. He wasn't any good. He was a jabroni. This isn't me telling you, Owen, that you're a jabroni. But I feel like the alliteration that works for me, and it kind of alludes to Australia. Let me know in your next email if you're okay with me calling you Outback Owen. Straight to the point, he says, just watch the Netflix game. Ugh, from here, hopefully we beat the Steelers and fingers crossed from there. When it's over, it's bye-bye Bobby and company. After the season ends, we get a real OC or we won't have a functioning QB or offense next season. Sorry, I'm flipping pages here. Bobby's email. After that, he says, offseason, free agency draft, hope rekindled, new season. Thanks for a great show, and go Texans. So no real question in Outback Owen's email, just kind of pointing out like, hey, man, this is what I'm hoping for. And then we need to clean house. I would say, and he kind of lays out the offseason here, the offseason, free agency, the draft, hope rekindled, new season. If we're taking offseason there, because he lists them like 5 in a row, what's the most important? That's a good question. What's the most important portion of the offseason for the Houston Texans? Is it the early part where you make changes to the coaching staff? Is it free agency where you can fix things with cap space? Cap space the Texans have far less of now than they used to. The draft, which the Texans have their full complement of draft picks for now. And then he says, hope rekindled new season. Yeah, the three parts of that, I'm curious what people think of the three parts of the offseason. The coaching carousel, I mean, obviously they're not firing D'Amico Ryans. They're not going to need a new head coach, but they're in all likelihood going to need a new OC and probably some position coaches. And who knows, maybe if D'Amico decides he wants to farm out play calling on the defensive side to somebody, the question becomes, is Matt Burke the guy he trusts to do that, or is there somebody else out there? Seth's brought up Robert Saleh's name, which would be amazing if you brought Robert Saleh on the staff. I like Matt Burke, but Robert Saleh is he's an accomplished overseer of a defense back when he was the DC for Kyle Shanahan. I would say that part of the season might be the most important part, even more important than free agency and the draft, you know, because, I mean, you're going to sign free agents. You're going to draft guys. You're not necessarily every season going to make substantive changes on your coaching staff. And I think the Texans need to get this right. They got to get this OC right. The last thing you want is CJ to have, for bad reasons, have 3 or 4 OCs in his first 5 years in the league. If it's because whoever comes in rehabilitates the offense and CJ's an MVP candidate again and all that stuff, then I can deal with the change and so can CJ. That's a good reason. Owen, I appreciate the email very much. All right, let's see here. Get my pages organized. Sorry, we're getting down to it. We got a few questions left in the mailbag. This is from Chris. What a depressing Christmas Day game. Who's to blame? Slowick, injuries, the O-line. At what point do we start looking at CJ for improvement? Still hopeful we can find a way to win a home playoff game. Not feeling very good about it. I think Chris just captured everybody's thoughts in one paragraph. Where do I point the finger on offense? Bobby Slowick's name is listed first. My hierarchy of blame on the offense goes Slowick because it's his baby. He's in charge of the offense. Ultimately, if you're in a company and it's your area that's underperforming that drastically, that's on you. So he's number one. O-line is number two. And I'll put Chris Strauser, the position coach, in that same line. The O-line is number two. And then I would say injuries to the receiving core. You miss Nico. You never really had, other than a game or two, Nico, Tank, Stephon Diggs, and I'll throw Joe Mixon in there as well, together as a group. You didn't. The five-headed monster was always missing a couple of heads. And one of the heads that's been there every game is Dalton Schultz, and he's not even a monster. He's like Grover. You know what I mean? Like, he's not a scary monster. He's just a Muppet, basically. So, and then I put CJ after that. Am I giving CJ a pass here? No, I'm not. My overall feeling on the offense is that week 7, 8, and 9, Green Bay, Indy at home, Halloween night against New York, when the pressure rates were just crazy high and CJ was getting his ass kicked and he started making strange decisions as to where to throw the football, like that Green Bay game where he throws it short of the sticks, out of bounds, stopping the clock, giving Green Bay a chance to come back and kick the game-winning field goal. Like, he just started doing weird shit about that time. And I think those three games especially damaged him. Not irreparably, but I think for 2024, they damaged him. And I think we're seeing it. I think physically and maybe mentally as well. I think he'll bounce back. I think he'll be fine long term. But this team cannot fail him. Darren texts or emails in, after watching Stroud continue to miss receivers even on checkdowns, do you think this year's version or last year's version is the real CJ Stroud? It appears he's lost his confidence. You just heard me talk. I think last year is the real CJ Stroud. I think people are discounting just how awful this offense has been coached and how lackluster and completely lacking in dog qualities this offensive line is. I think people are discounting that. And the people that I get, we get texts from, CJ sucks. And they're like, oh, go to hell. He sucks. I mean, I'm confident that it's much closer to last year's version. Let me put it that way. Does he ever have a season where he only throws five interceptions again? Probably not, because most guys don't. But I think I still have supreme confidence that this is the quarterback that can take you to the promised land eventually. I do. Chris in Kansas City says, we keep bemoaning the offensive line and nothing seems to change. I've noticed a number of good, not even great, just good O-lines have good centers, leaders in the middle of the line who give a shit about doing a good job. It's two separate things. We need a reliable center to call coverages and lead the group from the middle, foster some cohesion. It also feels, this may not be the case, but it feels like there's no pride on this offensive line. Like, do they even care that they're the main reason the team is struggling? Where's the accountability? I'm tired of seeing Mixon trying to get people going on the sideline all by himself. Does anyone else give a shit? Thanks, Sean. Love the show and the podcast. Keep on keeping on. I'll answer the second part. I agree with the first part. Yeah, you need a good center. And I don't know if the Texans have one right now. Jared Patterson's doing the most with what the good Lord gave him. Juice Scruggs might not be a good NFL offensive lineman. That's where we are at center right now. The offensive line does look and conduct itself. Not everybody. Like Jared Patterson, I've seen some interviews from him where I go, okay, that's an offensive lineman I want on my team. But yeah, like Laremy Tunsil posting Instagram pictures of his autographed shoes 2 minutes after they got their asses kicked by Baltimore. And I don't care if it was a pre-scheduled post. All the more reason that it's completely tone deaf. Like, you weren't going to take into account the fact that this might look bad, you posting this. Yeah, I don't need to hear Titus Howard talk ever again. He's an excuse maker. Laremy Tunsil, yeah, does conduct himself like a guy who doesn't seem to care tremendously about football to the extent that I would want my left tackle to. He sure does care when guys get paid. I will say that. So, yeah, I think it's a great observation. Like, they are a soft offensive line. I don't know that there's any, I don't know how you argue. I don't know how you argue against that. Like, that they don't run the football. They don't move people. They don't even seem tremendously interested in moving people. So, yeah, Chris, I think you're spot on. My friend John texts in or emails in. First off, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. The other thing is the comment you made about Tyreek Hill having his 12th kid was hilarious. I forgot what I said about him. Oh, quote, just imagining what his child support payments will look like after he's done playing. He'll never find another job that pays this well. End quote. It's true. I wasn't even trying to be funny. That's true. A lot of these guys, I don't think, realize that. Like, bro, you, Tyreek Hill, unless you've got some patent pending on some sort of widget or invention that I'm not aware of, then you ain't making $30 million a year in any other job. John says, it got me thinking the Texans have trouble scoring in the second half, according to teamrankings.com, 9.5 points on average. So, yes, Tyreek Hill has more kids than the Texans have scored in the second half of games this year. Yes, he's got 12 kids. They score 9.5 points. They can't even pay a proper tribute to Tyreek Hill's proclivity to procreate. I mean, that's one of the most amazing stats in the NFL this year, is that Tyreek Hill, just when you think that sperm train has fallen off the tracks, out comes another kid somewhere. The dude is amazing. It's like a lawn sprinkler of pregnancy. It's incredible. Thanks for the email, John. Thanks for getting me off on that tangent. Is this going to be the last episode of the Utopia podcast? I don't know. Things are much less governable on the internet. All right, two more. Dennis in Budapest, my man. Dennis says, here's a non-time-sensitive two-part question for you guys. One, shouldn't young OCs deserve a little more patience like quarterbacks in the Geno Baker Darnold lane? That's question number one. I would say no. Because, well, one, you cited three quarterbacks who people weren't patient with at all. I guess if your point was, man, if these teams had just stuck with Geno and Baker and Darnold, that they would have been better off. I think sometimes guys need a change of scenery. I think all those guys needed a change of scenery, you know, off of the Jets, the Browns, and the Jets again. Getting out of any of those places is a good thing. So I think sometimes it's environment. The fact of the matter is that OCs, I don't think they deserve more patience because they're more replaceable than quarterbacks. A lot of times, a lot of reasons why quarterbacks get patience, especially ones that are highly drafted, is there's a big investment in them. And sometimes quarterbacks should get flushed early on. You just can tell that they're not the guy. But I understand the concept behind giving a quarterback more leash. They're tougher to find. They're tougher to replace. You see signs that they could be something, and you cling to that because to boot them means you're starting over again, all over. OCs are just much more fungible, replaceable assets. That's just the fact. So, no, I don't agree with that. Number two, if indeed they should, how could, or if D'Amico simply decides he cannot yet cut ties with Bobby, how could he be helped out to succeed other than replacing his O-line coach? Can we hire Kubiak or someone in the family as a consultant? The Kubiak thing is interesting. I think that's the only thing he would ever do, is my guess, would be some sort of consultant where he didn't have to drive to NRG Stadium from wherever his ranch is on a regular basis. It's a great question. What else can they do besides replacing the offensive line coach? They can, I think finding better veteran leadership along the offensive line is something they can do. I think it's a poorly led room. So I think that's something. I think they, you know, getting some actual depth at running back. I think getting another weapon out of the backfield. I'm not talking about Dare Ogunbowale, old reliable Dare. And he is, he's very reliable. He's also not explosive or dangerous at all. So I think there's that. I mean, there's some personnel things that you can do. Dennis says, I want to give the job to Josh McDaniels if Nick and D'Amico want to go that route. I'm telling you right now, that's somebody who would probably not get an offer for a head coaching job somewhere. You want your OC, if he's good for the next 10 years, there's your guy. Did a great job with Mac Jones. Brothers on the staff. Went to school with Nick Caserio. Seems like he's only a real asshole when he's a head coach, not an OC. I'd be fine with it if they did it. I'd be cool with it. I know there's a lot of people that know a little about Josh McDaniels who are like, no, 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 no. But I'm not one of those people. I don't know, obviously, enough about him behind the scenes to where I would hate it. All right, last one, Jim from Northern Michigan. Hey, Sean, it's Jim. Been a while since I've had a question. How does CJ bounce back next year? He had so much swagger and confidence in the offseason. I feel like since that mentoring session with Caleb Williams, he's lost his swagger. How do the Texans hold on to Bobby Sloak and the O-line coach and say with a straight face they're doing best by CJ? Keep up the great work. I hope to grab a cigar with you at Lizards next time I'm down. Yeah, man, I'm down. I'll smoke a cigar at Lizards. I may do that today. You never know. I think the biggest thing CJ can do, one, is get healthy if he's banged up. Obviously, if health factors in, get healthy. I think him treating the offseason more like a quarterback who still has a lot to prove, as opposed to this past offseason where he was conducting himself more like a quarterback who had proven himself, to which some extent he had. But I think we would all agree, like, in retrospect, especially like all the podcasts and all the interviews and all the everything that came with CJ Stroud last offseason, felt like a little much then, but I don't think we wanted to say anything. At least I didn't, because it was fun. It was great to have a quarterback that was thought to be in that class. Don't do that again this year. I don't need to see CJ at Radio Row this year. Do I think he'll be there? Probably. A lot of guys go. Most guys go. But I don't need to see him at Radio Row. I think that's the biggest thing, is just kind of, it feels weird to say this because I don't think CJ is a guy who lost focus. I don't think he's a guy who necessarily like believes his own press clippings. Like, I think he's definitely a humble guy who may have gotten a little too big a taste of success earlier. Maybe this felt easier than it wound up being. I think he's gotten a big lesson this year in how difficult this league can be. How much his success is hinging on the success and the acumen and the skill of others. Not that these weren't things he knew, but it's in his face now. Like, it's causing failure now. When things like this cause failure, you tend to be more acutely aware of them. So that's, I think, the biggest change CJ not only needs to change who he works out with, where he works out, how he goes about his business physically, all those things. I think he needs to carry himself this offseason almost like he's a rookie again. You know, like with hunger and with pure focus on getting better and understanding where he sits right now in the galaxy of quarterbacks. He's not where he wants to be. So I think that's the biggest thing. I think it's just handling his business. And again, these are things like I'm not totally disappointed in CJ from that standpoint. It's just like, I don't think he's a quarterback where there's got to be these massive changes made, or he's got to change his routine, or he's got to change his inner circle, or all those things. I think that's the big thing. How do you handle your business in the offseason? All right, houmailbag@gmail.com for sending me emails. This one went a little longer than I thought it would, but I was having fun with these questions. You guys are doing a great job. Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast as well. We'll have another one coming up later this week, Friday, previewing the Titans and the Texans. So in the meantime, big thanks to Anthony Irwin, my producer. Big thanks to all of you for listening. Happy New Year. Let's make it a big one here for the Utopia Football Podcast. Have a great week. We'll talk to you on Friday.